I was very pleased to find proof of their trust when they agreed to meet me at the same place in order to pick me up the following morning at the same time, just after dawn. I watched my friend disappear in an upstream direction and then made my way back to leisurely to the center of the town. As there were no buses that early, I had to walk almost 1 hour. The first thing I did was to have a human breakfast, a normal breakfast with egg, toast, marmalade and good Colombian coffee, which I consider the best. Barranquilla was astir. It is a large, thriving town that has grown enormously since I first knew it. My first call was to the offices of the Iberian Airlines. I almost said it ever. Where I found a copy of the local trade directory. I checked under the heading Nurserymen. There was not a single entry. Out I went into the bustling street, hailed a taxi and asked the driver the best place to buy a few plants. He knew several places, so off we went. I drew a complete blank. Not one of the half dozen dealers I visited stocked the guayaba. Indeed, one or two thought that I was crazy trying to buy samples when all I had to do was to go up the country for a few miles and cut a few for myself. This last place I visited with the friendly cabby was owned by a little old woman. She didn't stock the plant, but she thought that if I crossed the river to the town of Santa Marta, I would stand a very good chance of finding a place where this particular plant was sold. I thanked my informant and the cabby drove me down to the ferry terminal. Not too far from the terminal, but still in the town, I noticed a store that sold the latest Japanese cameras. It occurred to me that, despite the dislike of the Iberians I had for cameras, they would hardly object if I went back with some samples of the plant for them and a new camera for myself. So I told the driver to take me to the Hotel Central with the oblinging cashier change a Peruvian bill of a large denomination into smaller bills. Then I went to the store and bought a Japanese camera. Back inside the taxi, I told the driver to return to the ferry and then made a quick check on the camera. It seemed to be in excellent order, so I loaded it with a roll of film. But this time we were at the ferry terminal, I paid off the driver and added a handsome tip. The trip across the delta was most enjoyable. The water was placid, the sun hot, the people friendly. I shot several frames and reflected on an amazing sequence of events that had sent me searching for the guayaba plant in the Colombian town for some visitor from another planet. I disembarked at the peaceful delta and took a bus to Santa Marta, about 25 miles from the huge river. Santa Marta is a pleasant little town, and I soon found a nursery. There were a couple of amiable Indians in charge of the place, and they let me wander round inspecting the stock. There were flowers of profusion, palm trees, fruit trees, orchids in in pots, but there was no sign of Guayaba plant. Disappointed, I explained my flight plight to the nursery man. They told me that there were one or two other plant firms in the town, but they did not think any of them stocked the tree. However, one of them knew of a large private garden. He had seen the plant growing in that garden. Perhaps the owner might let me have a few cuttings. Together with the nurseryman, I hailed a cruising taxi. I had been given the approximate position of the private garden, and we had little difficulty in finding it. The house where I made my inquiry was a substantial building in the type of a Spanish colonial style. The lady of the house took me into the grounds of the house. There were plenty of guayabas, and she let me have all the cutting I needed. She insisted on helping me pack the roots and buds in sacking, and would take a very little for the rather large bundle with which I eventually left. I had time to kill before the bus left for the ferry, so I placed the roots in the luggage office of the bus station and explored the town for an hour or so. In good time, I rescued the guayabas. I boarded the ferry and returned to Barranquilla. It was about 3:30 p.m. and a long time before dawn. I couldn't very well go to an hotel for bed and breakfast. Besides, I didn't want to let the precious plants out of my sight. So I spent an uneasy night wandering round the town, sitting in coffee shops, clutching the cuttings, waiting for the first light of dawn. The first part of the night was not too bad. At about 1 a.m., I found myself back in the same small marketplace I had visited the previous evening. The smell of toasting chicken weighted my nostrils. I bought a half chicken wedged in the plants between my legs, and in this time ate the chicken much more slowly. These, our teeth, I thought, are made for chopping meat and not for chopping fine juices nor vegetarian delicacies. The hours after midnight dragged. Again, all the stalls closed. If I had been a policeman, I would have been very suspicious of a lone foreigner walking the streets of Barranquilla, hugging a pile of plants. Fortunately, I did not see anybody in authority, and just as dawn was breaking, I made my way along the river front to the rendezvous on the embankment. I had scarcely reached the agreed spot when Satura, all by himself, came fussing up in the silent speedboat. I managed to clamber aboard, and Satura immediately opened the magnetic power regulator. The comfort of the boat made me sleep immediately for a full hour. Suddenly we were all aboard Satura's control ship, and he invited me to go along with him to his control room, which is situated in the middle section of the spaceship. "Well done," he congratulated me. "We will take very good care of you and the cuttings. I see no reason why we shouldn't have a trial guayaba plot and then send off our own cuttings to Itibiratu to see if they will stand transplanting. There is a footnote on it, which I also can read in this connection. In this connection, I must mention that I observed that the return of the Tiberians explorers coincided with the departures of the Magdalena River Delta expedition. I am sure that these people never keep two missions going at the same time, even though I was told that they are able to supervise several differently located plantations research labs. End of the footnote. I go up in the text again. Back to the at the plantation. As I had feared, Satarö took a special interest in the camera I had bought. He told me about Amat Mina, the science of soul based on ancient beliefs. Not that my friend believe in reincarnation, but definitely they do care for photos. They do not care for photos and pictures because of certain implications. I understood that besides certain security restrictions, they simply do not care about their looks. They are devoted of all vanity, pride, and feeling of superiority. I suppose it is a religious thing to avoid contempt. During all the time, and particularly where Siti was concerned, I never saw them use a mirror. Satura kept the camera and gave it back to me before my return to Lima on the 27th of February. He never touched the film, and the shots I took on the ferry to Santa Marta are all I have from this trip. And this is typical, I must say, for those contexts. They always try to let the people themselves find out the truth of such contexts, and are almost never let any people get direct proofs. But of course there are some examples of some picture proofs, and image for example the mayor and Semyaza contacts, which got a lot of pictures as proofs in the mid of the 70s. Then next is chapter 13, Another Civilization's Prayer. Take a look at time. There is 13 minutes. I can go on reading. Back at the Mirim base, the chief botanists, one of them a woman astronaut scientist, on the 23rd and 24th of February, made a serious investigation of the fruit and seeds as well as the plants that I was able to buy in Santa Marta. Their research work lasted 2 complete days, deselecting, analyzing, bedding the plants, and savoring their flavor. All this was reported to Itibira too. I have always enshaved to predict things, but this interest in health and life-spanning plant I do not believe exaggerated. Perhaps future generations will do what the Tiberians did. I know at the present time, in multitude of war material invading genesis keep us busy, and the serious investigation of the tropical fruit may appear to be the joke of a bad comedy, but isn't it life itself that would make such a comedy of health viable? It was Mr. Hua who took the greatest interest, and who took me under his wing to show me the run of the laboratories and answer my questions. I already described how they laid out the plantation under huge green protective sheets, and but I have given little indication of the extremes of which my friends went in order that their flavor stations should operate under the best conditions. For example, air filters, humidifiers had been installed at strategic points so that no matter what the weather, the plants, biologists could always have controlled weather conditions inside the flavor station. The main path through the plantation complex separated the station into two sections, each of which was made self-contained by means of colored dividing streets that were rigged tree-high. In front of the actual biology research laboratory was a wing consisting of several large tents. In these tents were many vegetable guinea pigs, which had been brought from Itibira too, had been transplanted and had been used as required for grafting on to samples of earth vegetation. The object of the grafting operations was to obtain a fine strain of individual plant life as it was possible to get by uniting the best of earth types with the best of Itibira 2 types. The biology research laboratory was Hua's pride and joy. It was a series of interconnecting marquees stretching for some 350 feet and was some 60 feet wide. It was divided into experimental bays, rather like the operating rooms of hospitals. In these bays, the ETB Rain biologist went to work on plants in much the same way that a doctor goes to work on a patient. The finest instruments were used to deselect the cells of the plants. The veins, the stems of the plants, were put under close scrutiny. X-ray pictures were taken, not the normal plate type X-rays, but continuous record, rather like a so-called roll of film. The plant surgeons, for this was what the biologists really were, could watch on separate left and right hand panels let into the wall. On these panels, the A generator projected a continuous report of the deselection as it proceeded. These television-type panels were studied throughout the entire process by special observation officers who indicated their opinions to a chief scientific officer who controlled the actual work itself. The accommodation was very gay. Religious symbols of Itibira too were scattered throughout the complex in order to remind the biologists of their homeland. Work was never carried out standing. The biologists sat at their work in the oriental manner. Despite the excellent atmospheric conditions within the various sections of the laboratories and grafting unit, I found that by end of the day I was feeling rather worn out. Siti noticed this and suggesting that before going to the craft for our evening meal, we should stroll across to the bath tents and relax for a short while. This sounded most agreeable, so she had a word with her brother and we left the bay where she had been working and walked the short distance to the bathing units. Mention has already been made on several occasions to the low of water that the ETB rains had. Some historians refer to empires which were developed along mighty rivers as riparian empires. So in years to come, when regular communications have been established between Earth and Itibira too, future historians will, I think, refer to my friends as the product of an extraterrestrial riparian civilization. My friends normally bath at least twice a day, before going to work and when work is finished in the late afternoon. Their bathing habits are a combination of the Finnish and Japanese. The normal bath is like the Finnish sauna unit, and they have both wet and dry bath units. Because of their lack of inhibitions about nakedness, men and women bath together. I was indeed in relaxing half hour. The tropical birds were sweeting the air with their music. The scent of hundreds of different plants invaded our nostrils. The cleansing water relaxed the body. I noticed that Siti, who is meticulous about her personal hygiene, was scrubbing furiously as she had done filthy work in the laboratories. I remarked upon this, and she frowned a little. "Can you not smell?" she demanded. "Smell what?" I wondered. But then she told me that my face had eaten meat. I laughed like an idiot. On two occasions I had eaten chicken in Barranquilla. Siti grinned and pulled a face at me. She looked so adorable that I almost forgot the presence of other people in the bath unit. "It is the comparative cool and early evening," we sauntered back to the spacecraft. It was there, I suppose, that Itibirain showed their gift for domesticity. The dining quarter and health lounges were bright with decorations, lovely soft divans and deep cushions, gay with floral patterned covers, invited relaxation after the day's work. I admired the day in which the women, some being the wives of the astronauts who shared similar jobs to the men all day, could shed their technical role during the off-duty hours and revert to an essential feminism such as one experiences when in Japan. They even took it upon themselves to see to the running of the domestic side of the expedition. We spent a pleasant evening in the mess before making our way back to Siti's quarters. For the first time since I had met this remarkable woman, I said with her the evening prayer, the first intercosmic prayer to God available to us human beings on earth. The prayer was begun and ended with the word Talayan, uttered in a reverential way. It is both an vocation and a veil diction. The whole prayer, which I translated into English, is, I think, so much more meaningful than the normal everyday prayer, with its constant demands for this and for that. Let me prepare to fear nothing, my one and only God nature. Let me stay strong, honest to myself and others. Let me be prepared for kindness at all times, so that I cause no pain to others or myself. Let me, only one in cosmos, keep thy laws. Let me abstain from all excesses. Let me be true to myself and others. Let me absorb the laws of peaceful death. And that was done on that chapter. We have reached 26 minutes, and I think I end this chapter 13 by this. Next is chapter 14, Death of a Monkey. It will be on a separate audio file then.